meditation. Obviously, there's a lot to meditation, at least to the Buddhist meditation. It's to get it right. Basically, there's it's the eighth factor of an eightfold path. So there goes a lot before that, and an important point is obviously good virtue. And that is the cause for making it even possible to settle down the mind, that we don't have any regrets. We have a little bit of ease with ourselves. And I hope you keep more or less pretty good virtue, that you get a chance to settle down the mind a little bit. And it's not just the calming of the mind, it's also to see what is going on. There are things that are escaping us. I just came back from Germany, and I see how much people are in the rut. Sort of, my parents love to be distracted. Starts in the morning, the television is on, or radio is on, something is always on, and they are full on, basically, and it goes through the day. And they're pensioners already, so they never learned any other way, and they love it that way. But that doesn't leave a lot of time for reflection, obviously, and a lot of time to really see the processes that are going on in our minds. Luckily, they have a pretty healthy mind. I just have some good qualities that they inherited through their upbringing, whatever. And so they get along well with their neighbors, have lots of friends still, and live just by instinct, more or less, a pretty wholesome life. Some of us don't have such an fortunate upbringing. We maybe have inherited a few bad qualities from our parents, from people we lived with, we were influenced from when we were young. And especially for those who feel that they want to improve their mind, there's still work to do. It's just great if you become more aware what is going on, to see these thoughts in the mind. They're not your thoughts. There's a bit of your mummy talking, and a bit of your daddy talking, a bit of your siblings talking, a bit of your old friends talking. It's a construction. Even you're thinking in English. I sometimes think in two languages. So basically, I see the conditioning of that mind. A lot of the teachings I received were in English. So a lot of that thinking is in English. And a lot of the time when I go back into past memories, then they're in German. So all that to figure out that this, what is happening in your mind, is a conditioned process. It's coming from somewhere. We say it's my thoughts, I think good thoughts, I think bad thoughts. It actually is just thoughts. Come from somewhere. And to put these thoughts in front of you, just to not even to try to be completely quiet in the mind, at least not to push yourself trying to be quiet, and just getting this awareness of that process in the mind, of this constant inner chatter, this inner monologue happening in an environment where we decide, actually, now it's not the time to talk so much in the head. Now it's the time to be more the watcher, the observer, at least not to buy into the thoughts. If a thought comes up, then we usually follow that train of thought, and then it goes from there to there to there to there. And now in the meditation, we can at least try, oh, there's a thought, okay, but I'm not going to follow you now. I'm not going to go in the direction of proliferation, go in the direction of being with the body, being with the breath, being calm for half an hour. We don't have to do anything. We especially don't have to figure out anything that's going to happen in the future. don't have to figure out anything that happened in the past. So what we can do as newbies in the meditation is just to have that awareness of what is happening in that half an hour. Instead of trying to be somewhere else, just be completely aware of what is going on in your mind. We set a little bit of the intention that we don't try to proliferate. We don't want to go into the future. We don't want to go into the past. But the thoughts are still going to come up in the mind. And then just not to follow them. Especially if it's leading away from where you are right here and now. Okay? And one important factor to be even able to do that is to treat yourself kindly during the meditation. When thoughts come up, don't fight, don't struggle. Make sure that observer, the one that is putting things in front of himself or herself, is a kind one. If there's not enough kindness from the beginning of your meditation, then you will struggle with what is coming up. There's not enough patience there to just let the things be. So I give a guided meditation, so we try that in the beginning just to put some kindness into it. I have no idea how I'm going to do that today. And you obviously can figure that out for yourself in your own meditation, how you treat yourself as kind as you can. I probably give an example of how I treat my mind. If that fits you or not, I don't know. Let's see how it works for you. And the rest will be pretty much explained then for the newcomers while we go along, because it's going to be a guided meditation. What you just remember is these three points: that you try to be a kind observer. We don't want the mind to go to figure anything out in the future or anything in the past. If it goes there, we tell it very kindly, now is not the time. Now is the time where you can rest. You can just be with whatever is here, with all the sense impressions that are left to us. And the first thing is going to be, you're going to hear this clock ticking. Do you hear it ticking now? I don't hear it ticking. Is it still here? And when we try to meditate, these things will become more prominent. Because the eyes will be closed. And we cannot close our ears. So we hear the street, the cars, the noise a bit stronger. Going to hear that clock over there. And that is all going to happen. And there's a lot of other things happening in this moment. And hopefully we've just become a little bit more aware of what is going on right here and now. So, if everybody's ready, any major questions that have to be answered before we start? Or non-major questions? Little questions? Tiny questions? No, okay. So, first of all, please try to make yourself as comfortable as you can on your chair. Sit in a position where you can breathe in and out nicely. Check if your belt is too tight or your trousers, whatever you're wearing, is too tight, that your belly cannot move in and out properly, feels restricted. It's completely okay if you loosen your top button here or whatnot. We're not going to associate anything wrong with that. Have your feet in a comfortable position from your chair. All these things are really important, that you have the feeling my body can sit for this half an hour without being harmed. Sorry, I'm just gonna quickly set my watch, otherwise I'm gonna miss it. Right. So just become a little bit more aware of your body just sitting here. We start with this well-wishing to the body. Wish you, even if you're hurting a little bit, maybe if you're in a little bit of pain, we just try in that moment to make you as comfortable as we can, body. And the breath can flow in and out easily. Can take a nice deep breath and expand your chest a little bit, and then when you exhale, just let your shoulders drop. You see, there's always some tension in the shoulders still. Just place the body comfortable enough. We have that awareness now. Nothing is going to happen to it. We might still have to wriggle a little bit around, but we're not going to damage anything. It's very important to know that. We don't have to have any doubts in our meditation that when something hurts a little bit, that is going to cause the body any harm. So, and I guess your eyes are all closed. And I usually put a little smile on my face and just bring up this little bit of kindness and interest towards that moment right here and now. For example, for me it's nice having a group meditation now. I haven't meditated with people for a while. So how beautiful that we all sit here together, sharing an interest in improving the mind, making it brighter, making it calmer. What a beautiful and rare thing in the world. Oh, it's a great effort already. Nice that you're all here. So, well done. With this little bit of kindness, we can now try to see what's going on. What's going on in the body? What sense impressions come in without us doing anything? That stuff just comes. We can just sit back and watch. And if you have the feeling you need a little bit of an anchor, you feel too swept around, then you can always get back to your breath. The body knows how to breathe. It does it all by itself. So that is always nice to know. That's always a good refuge point. And just not forcing it there, holding it there, but if it feels right to be there, the mind will go there by itself. And that is always the point you can get back to your breath. things that are usually important, they can drop away for this half an hour now. It's completely okay not to figure anything out for this half an hour. Not being anybody anymore. Not having to be anybody anymore. No obligations. Like Ajahn Brahm says, taking the hands off the steering wheel. To see a thought arising in the mind and vanishing again. Not grabbing onto it, not holding it, not even finding it remotely interesting. Just a thought coming and going. Just building up that awareness as good as we can. Awareness of just watching without interfering. The only interference is that little bit of kindness that you can still put into the one that is watching. If you have the feeling there's still a critical element to that, to your mind right now, can still put a little bit more kindness there until everything that comes up in our meditation is all right. It's so all right that we don't have to interfere. Everything is allowed to come up and go again. If you still feel tenseness in the body, put some kindness into relaxing. Just on the out-breath, just the shoulders can relax, the neck can relax, the eyes can relax. If you have the feeling you're holding on to something, just be kind with it. Thank you. patience is gonna be the way to make that body as comfortable as it can get. I hope you're all at a point now where whatever happens, you're comfortable with. Now we start hearing the clock, hearing the street a bit more. Feeling the body a bit more. One thing always becomes a bit more prominent and then it goes into the background. And your job is just to observe kindly what comes up and what goes. Sound, thought, feeling in the body, your breath. Are you comfortable enough not to interfere? it's only a few minutes left, and I can remind you now and ask you, is the mind back to its old habit? Just completely involved in this train of thoughts, one following the other? Or is there still an awareness of the observer? And if you were lost again in the train of thoughts, I can just bring it kindly back now, just a few more minutes left. 5 minutes to completely relax, to fall asleep and start snoring on your chair. Just exactly that sort of mind state that you need when you want to fall asleep. Just letting go of everything, hopefully comfortable enough. Just watching for a short while. And not getting involved for a short while. Freedom of not having to be involved for a short while. meditation comes to an end now. I'm gonna ring the bell 3 times. And then at the end of the 3rd ring, you open the eyes and finish the meditation for today.
We never get the talk.
What talk?
That bit of genius you're about to come out with.
I wish I had your confidence.
You always tell us something useful.
Yeah. Well, maybe not today. Okay. That light bulb doesn't want to come on. I was relatively short notice for me, so either I do my stuff if nobody has a theme. She or he wants to discuss, as long as it has to do something with something practical, something pragmatic, not about what happens in the seventh heaven realm or what. I don't have the slightest clue.
Do your stuff. Mm-hmm. Just do your stuff.
I do my stuff.
Yeah, go.
Well, okay then.
We'll risk it.
Well, one thing, I came from Sydney and was in a different community, a smaller community, and the atmosphere was also quite nice. And one thing that is fascinating me over and over again and over the years is what we call reality. It's sort of, even as monks in the monastery, we think, well, we all have the same religion, we all in robes, have the same rules, and this and that, and there should be so much similarity there, you realize we're all living in our own little universes. Huh? There's some monks, I have a very small connection to their universe, actually. No? Even if they're my brothers in arms, or non-arms. My brothers without the stick. And it's fascinating, because you read so much of the same teaching, you read the same books, and you heard so many talks from Ajahn Brahm. I don't know how many thousands of talks I must have heard now, actually, from Ajahn Brahm. And a lot of people are there for many years as well, and they heard the same talks. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, wow, they still have a completely different comprehension of what is taught. Huh? when I look around, is everybody is in his or her own little universe. And realizing that, I ask myself, is it possible to have an influence on how this universe is created in one's mind? What are the factors that determine our view, that determine how the way we perceive reality? And then I ask myself, what kind of universe do I want to create myself? And I see some Buddhist universes that I find quite crappy. Don't want to have anything to do with them. They're the good Buddhists. But it still is, I don't want to live there. If that's the Buddha's way, go ahead. Not with me. Don't want to go there. As one thing that I liked from the very beginning was first the inquiry, that the Buddha encouraged people to inquire what is going on. And the second one is that he said, it's the teaching that I teach is supposed to lead you to the end of suffering, to more and more liberation. And it's beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, and beautiful in the end. And then I sometimes look around and I think, that doesn't look like it's beautiful in the beginning, it doesn't seem to be beautiful in the middle, and who the heck knows what's going to happen in the end, actually. And so for me, it's if we create that universe ourselves in our mind the whole time, I think we should be very careful in the way we treat ourselves with our thoughts. And if we are careful the way we treat ourselves in our mind, we're also going to be automatically more careful how we treat other people around us. Because it is your own universe all the time. I'm sharing very little with you here right now. You might be restless, you might be depressed, you might be horny, you might be greedy, you might be sleepy, you might be I don't know what. So many people in a room actually with their own different universes. I hope you're happy where you are in your universes. See what are the causes that my universe is the way it is? How did that universe form? What is in the realm of my possibility to change how I perceive my reality? And first of all, for me, it's get aware of your inner monologue. If there's somebody, if you do something wrong and somebody says, why are you always so stupid? Instead of, just a moment there. Why do you talk to me like that? You wouldn't want anybody else talking to you like that. A lot of people do that themselves. They talk to themselves in exactly that manner. Why are you always so stupid? Can you not be more careful? You should be more aware. All these shoulds and shouldn'ts, and there's a tone behind that inner monologue, and I hope you're becoming aware of that. You're welcome. So that is one thing the meditation can do for you. If you instead of just following each train of thought and considering that is mine, that is my thought going on there, and now it goes here, and now it goes in the past, in the future, and I figure something out about the... In Germany, the refugee theme is a big thing. People watch television all the time, and now they think, well, refugees, that is a big problem. If you read the newspapers, watch the television, you can really think the refugees are the big problem now. But it's just like, I don't see many more refugees in my town, actually. There are a few camps where the ferry wheels and what, they came once a year, actually. that whole place is now covered with containers with refugees. No? So, but that's it. That's just the way it is right now. But how does it affect my mind? Huh? Do I get scared now? Oh, are the Libyans are going to integrate into Germany? Or going to have their own way? Are we going to have more suicide attacks? What not? That stuff is all out of my control. Huh? That is. It's also not just because I'm living in Australia, but it's even if I was living in Germany, it's none really of my concern. If I don't want to join a political party and be active, if I don't want to go down there and share my belongings with them, if it's not any practical action involved with that stuff, why should I think about it? Huh? Just to increase the fear in my mind? Just to make myself more paranoid? Hmm? 3 elections now in Germany, in the east of Germany, and the new party is basically just a few years old, and super duper right wing. Hmm? Not completely Nazi, but actually sort of on the right fringes. 15 to 20%. Huh? That's East Germany. It wouldn't be the same in the rest of Germany. But that's the climate right now. Huh? You know, people getting scared again. Huh? Too many foreigners coming in, and I understand that. But I ask myself, what reality do I want to create for myself? What reality is really helpful to create for myself and other people? And I don't see any benefit in becoming more paranoid and becoming more hostile towards foreigners. I just see the benefits of developing a softer mind. And that is not going to work if my mind becomes more fearful. Well, fear is always the precursor to anger. So it's good if we learn to watch what is coming into our awareness, what is coming into our mind. How do I think of myself and others? Which tone does this thought process have? Huh? Is that encouraging guy who wants really the best for me? Or is that some old critical guy, maybe some relative or some parent, if you were unlucky, who is still complaining in your head? Huh? See how that inner monologue, what tone of voice that inner monologue has. And if you have the feeling, you're not treating me right, make it kinder in that moment. You just say, no, why do you treat me like that? Why do you shout? Is that helpful? Can that be helpful for myself or other people? Do I want to be treated like that? Do I want to treat other people like that? And the more you meditate, hopefully, you more become aware of this inner monologue you have to live with day by day by day and second by second. When you get up from the first breath you take in the morning to the last breath you take, usually, when you go to sleep. That is our inner reality, our inner universe, I call that. That constant babbling inside our head. And that is just one factor. The other factor is our wants and not wants. All the things we like and we don't like. And you will see, if you practice that for a while, that there is a connection between the two of them. There's a connection between what we agree upon in our minds and what we want and what we don't want. If I go back to that asylum example, if I read a lot of these things and don't apply my common sense and what I've learned over the years to it, then the thoughts themselves go in a direction where they think, oh, this is dangerous. Germany can only take that amount of people. Huh? and also most of them are Muslims, young men. See what happens in Cologne. They were closing around women, basically, in groups of 30, building a circle around them and then grabbing them everywhere. I don't know if you read that in the papers, how well the news spread to Australia. So people, and especially people you wouldn't expect it, because usually from my upbringing I was a bit more on the left side. And how many people more to the left or in the middle are developing thoughts that they really get scared now of stuff like that. And it is understandable. I can understand it, but how far I want to go in that direction with that fear still should be determined by my own cleverness. And if I see that direction, if I think these thoughts that there is danger there and whatnot, the only thing that is going to happen is that I will expect that. The next time somebody does something wrong, I will look, is he dark colored? If he is dark colored, that will confirm my view, actually. Marroquin, that's right. They are the guys, they are the grabbers. And that is how perception is built, by thoughts, but what we put into our minds. And the clearer we see that process, hopefully the clearer we see also the danger in certain directions. Letting the mind go in a certain direction, because if we have ever tasted a little bit of peace in our mind, if we have experienced a state of non-fear, a state of relaxedness, it's always when the mind has a certain kindness and ease to it, and that is not going to happen if I agitate the mind, and if I put a lot of negativity into the mind, a lot of fear into the mind. So it's not trying to avoid things so much as seeing clearly, is that good for myself, this train of thought? Is that good for other people? Is that really helpful? Is that leading in a direction where any peace can happen? Is there even a possibility of a happy outcome in that direction of thought? So you can use everything that you hear, and you will put it into your own little universe. You can do nothing about it, and I can do nothing about that. The way we perceive things is already determined, in a way, by our likes and dislikes, and by the construct of our thoughts. There's a certain... it's not as flexible as we wish it to be. I think the older people can agree that the older we get, the more stiff it gets in our mind, the more set we are in our views. It's just not that much flexibility there anymore. And because we know the whole thing is going to settle and set more, it's good to be, if you're younger, still be aware as you can to settle that in a nice direction. Because once you created a real miserable world for yourself, it's the harder, the older you are, the harder it is to get out there, because there is a certain power and a certain rigidness towards these thoughts. They stick. The views are getting more and more rigid. So the only advice I can give you is to really meditate from time to time. See if you can make that a little bit of a habit. And for the newcomers, this half an hour is completely artificial in a way. Yeah? Can be far shorter. It can be longer. The important thing is to get used to start to watch that process, seeing it as a process, seeing thoughts not so much as, oh, that's me. Huh? Seeing, oh yeah, that is something that comes from the past. And sometimes I can hear my mom in my mind. I can hear my dad. I can see my brother, my grandparents, friends that influenced me. They are all still there in my mind. And it's this compiled sort of thing, this thought process. And being aware of that is, and not always buying into it, you can start to see, wow, this thought is not a wholesome thought. It's not going to do me any good. It's not going to do other people any good. And you can just chuck it out. And you don't have the feeling you chuck anything of yourself away. It's just a thought. Huh? And sometimes these thoughts can be really, really stupid. Can be really unwholesome, stupid thoughts in the mind. And they seem to be very real. And sometimes they can feel very real. But if you look a little bit closer, we can see often that, wow, that there cannot be any good outcome in that direction. Huh? If I continue thinking in that direction, it can never be good for me, it can never be good for others, will never be helpful. Huh? I mean, for example, a sort of, what is it all worth? We're all going to die anyway. Huh? It's completely valid thought, isn't it? We're all going to die anyway. In a few billion years, the sun is going to envelop the earth, actually. Nothing is going to be left here. Huh? But what does that thought in my day-to-day life do for my mind in a positive way? Anything? Can you see any happy outcome in that direction? And the nice thing is, if the mind realizes there is no happy outcome in that direction, you don't have to force yourself, oh, don't go there, mind, don't think that anymore. If the mind realizes that is an unhappy direction, it's going to drop it automatically. That is the nature of the mind. We want that is pleasant, and we avoid what is unpleasant. We cannot do it any different. That's the absolute unavoidable function of the mind. Looking for the pleasant, avoiding the unpleasant. Seeing what is leading to more suffering clearly makes the mind drop it automatically. Seeing that thought, there is no happy outcome there. I'm not going to be more cheerful today at work. I'm not going to treat my children nicer because of that thought. I'm going to be more pleasant. I'm not going to breathe easier with that thought. Realizing that, the mind will drop it. But most of the time, we're just not aware enough to see that thought is leading in no wholesome direction. And that is the whole training. Figuring out more and more, actually, if you treat yourself kindly in your mind. Do you have a kind attitude in your mind? And if not, then, in that moment you realize it, then put the nice attitude in. Now pat yourself on the shoulder and say, wow, I realize I'm not treating myself nicely. Great. Now I can stop, because I realize it. Of course you don't have to. Nobody is forcing you. And it's not going to help. You not become a better person by treating yourself crappy. It's not going to happen. If you don't treat yourself nicely, nobody else will. Huh? maybe from your old karma from time to time, your mommy is still around or whatnot, and she can forgive you for being in a crappy mood. But in the long run, actually, you have to take care of your own mind. And the nicer and more beautiful that becomes, the more that reality, what we call reality, will change in a way that is less full of suffering. And that for me is what the Buddha was talking about. It's not changing something out there, it's changing that mind, seeing what burdens that mind, seeing what makes it heavy, makes it painful, and seeing that more and more clearly, dropping more and more of things that are just unwholesome from it. And then hopefully looking so deep and finding so much happiness within that we don't have to look so much outside anymore for our happiness, that we can develop some beauty within and become less and less dependent on what is happening outside. Okay, that's good enough for tonight,
actually. Is that it for you?
Well, we have some questions as well. What time is it?
Yeah, it's only 4:15 if you're okay.
Any questions that I somebody wants to answer about what I said right now? Oh, I'm happy that I'm so clear. And
you were.
Okay.
Mm.
Very good.
Yeah.
Can you come back again soon?
Thank you. Well, I come regularly. Yes. The question here is, I was brought up as a Catholic, although not confirmed. Now I have become a Buddhist.
Oh, good.
I am still having trouble separating the two. What is that? Am I a bad Buddhist? Sure. Your advice. Your advice, please. Okay. Well, my advice is not to be anything. You know, I just mentioned that you can be a crappy Buddhist and you can be a good Catholic and you can be a good Catholic and or vice versa, wherever I was. Don't know, I'm too tired. And there's obviously I was a Protestant, so I only know a little bit about Catholicism. But I'm pretty sure there is good stuff there as well. But if there is stuff there that comes with the upraised finger, and if there is stuff there that doesn't feel right, that doesn't feel kind, ask yourself, actually, how do they know so clearly? Who is telling you that? And just because it's written in the Bible or whatnot, I hope you don't believe that. There's a lot of nonsense in the Bible, actually. A lot of horrible stuff. If you don't believe me, read the Old Testament. It just is the most horrible story I ever read in my life, actually. It's completely crazy. I cannot understand how anybody can believe that. Sorry. It's just, and Jesus was far more inspiring, actually, New Testament for me. Just don't believe something because somebody tells you to. And obviously, if you grow up like that, and if they tell you, oh, if you don't believe, then God is going to be so angry with you, and you're going to at least go to purgatory. Maybe you have to go to hell for eternity. Well, I don't know. So if you believe that, then you're in trouble, obviously. But it's a belief. Buddhists don't believe that. So ask yourself, is that a belief that is really helpful? And if there's really a God out there who wants to be pleased in such a way, just really think if you want to spend eternity with that guy, actually. Yeah? I wouldn't. Sorry, Dad. Doesn't sound right to me. But sure, Catholics, they have a strong conditioning, actually. Especially I've met Irish Catholics and Polish Catholics, and they are, wow, pretty well indoctrinated. So it's hard. Always ask yourself, how do they know so well? How do they know so well? Who really knows so well? Who of these authority figures know so well to can really tell you what is right or wrong? And if it's not, doesn't help to make your mind more peaceful, I would be suspicious of it in the first place anyway. So that is the advice I can give you, is sort of, you also have your Catholic karma, obviously, if that creates a lot of fear in you, then you have been indoctrinated. I have been indoctrinated as a Buddhist. See who fares better in the end, actually.
We're all indoctrinated. Could they be both? Just be a Catholic Buddhist?
Yeah, you can be. It can be both, like I said, basically. I don't have a problem with that. Another question? Yeah?
Young lady over here.
Yeah.
I'm a Catholic as well,
yeah?
But I like the Buddhist as well.
Yeah.
But the previous Buddhist talking here saying we don't have a soul, but you do say we have a soul.
No, I don't.
Well, I heard you say something before about a soul.
No, I said if we spend, they say you spend eternity either in hell or heaven, actually. And that is the concept of a soul is different in Buddhism, basically.
But I still believe we have a soul.
No, because a soul in Christianity is associated with this divine spark that God put into us, actually, this unchangeable something which is stable in itself, ever-changing, everlasting, and that doesn't exist in Buddhism. And Buddhism is always a conditioned process. Huh? There is nothing stable. The one of the big rules in Buddhism is everything is impermanent. What we consider as self is completely impermanent. We become, through our life, we become a different personality. Our personality changes through all our life. I don't see any divine spark which stays the same. I can watch as much as I want. Cannot see that sort of thing. And because Buddhists don't believe in God in the first place, there's no divine spark being put in by anybody else anyway. And if it was like that, it either raises the question, actually, if they have all this divine spark, that pure sort of thing in the first place, how can anybody go to hell? Or if some people get created with a beautiful spark and other people get created with a dark spark, if that is determined from the very beginning, actually, what is the point of that?
Where's justice? There's no justice.
That would be completely unjust as well, yeah?
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
So that was the concept was right. There is not that fixed soul in Buddhism, but there's obviously rebirth in Buddhism, something that continues over the lifetime. But not non-changing soul, that doesn't exist, that is correct. Okay? Can you please talk about the importance of saying sorry?
Six minutes.
No pressure.
The importance to say it is. Full stop.
Well, first of all, I think it's important to have that sense that I did something that wasn't correct. Huh? I think that's the basic for saying sorry. Huh? It's not, oh, I'm a Buddhist, now I have to say sorry. It's basically... first of all, I have to accept that I did some behavior that was obviously unskillful, caused distress or disharmony, And acknowledging that, that sense of I want to put that right arises in my mind, at least. And with that concept having arisen in my mind, I don't have a problem so much of saying sorry as well, because I like to put that right. Wanna make sure that person knows that I maybe wasn't at my best in that moment, or whatever. And then, obviously, it's important that I also, if I have that whole setup in my mind, that I first acknowledge that I do something wrong, that I can go out there, say sorry. I obviously then believe in that forgiveness that is here, that was in brackets here behind it, saying the sorry in brackets, forgiveness. And that forgiveness is obviously something that I myself can practice. That is sort of, am I the person that makes it possible for people to say sorry for me, and then I really let go of that stuff? And not just as a, I'm a good Buddhist, and we're all right, mate. But in reality, basically, I still hate his guts. So there's obviously a process there of really trying to put my mind in a position where it has forgiveness for that person. It's not just something that I can force onto my mind. If something does something to me which I find harder to forget, then it might take a little bit longer. And then I don't say sorry usually before I feel it. I have to have that right in my mind first. It's not for me, it's not just a phrase. In Buddhism we have, for example, when we leave a place, usually with the at least towards the senior monks, usually towards the whole Sangha, the tradition was you have a tray with incense and candles, you bow three times, and you say it can be a phrase in Pali. Hopefully you understand what you're saying then in Pali, because otherwise it becomes even more meaningless. Or you can say it in English, which I usually encourage, and that say, if I did anything by body, speech, or mind that offended you, please forgive me. And if you have if you did anything in body, speech, or mind, I forgive you as well. And through my experience in ropes, I can tell you that even that beautiful ritual can become a completely meaningless ritual. Because people just do that, and then they sort of, I went through the procedure. But then you encounter them again, and you know they haven't forgiven you. They're still holding a grudge. There's still something in the air. And so obviously that forgiveness is a process in our own mind. To put that in a way that we understand that person enough, or the circumstances enough, or whatever it is, that we can put that aside. Or what I can do in the end is I want to treat myself kindly. So I know if I think negative, unwholesome thoughts about that other person, I'm going to harm myself. I just meditate for long enough now to know that. I know how difficult it becomes to live with in a community with a person that I don't like anymore. And like and dislike comes through my train of thought. So I try to be very careful when I think about people and try to put that right. And that goes all into the sorry forgiveness process. You just need a bit more awareness. But it can also be a nice gesture, obviously, to say sorry to somebody. You make the first step of going into a direction of reconciliation with somebody.